You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks, along with Rob Rang. Happy Monday. Hope everybody had a great weekend. Today's episode is brought your way by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Now for your lead stories on Locked On Seahawks. Rob, it's been a pretty crazy weekend for the Seahawks. There's a lot of different stuff that we could dive into right now, but let's talk about the return of Paul Richardson here first. Richardson visited with the Seahawks last week, and he was still a free agent, released by the Washington football team back in February. And listening to him yesterday after the Sunday mock scrimmage, hearing a little bit about what he's gone through this summer, you and I both know amid this pandemic that there have been a lot of emotions that people have been going through. It's been a roller coaster for all of us. But I think in the case of Paul Richardson, it's been even crazier. He was able to experience the joy of having a daughter being born in the offseason, and then he also lost his grandmother. You couple that with the fact he was released by Washington, and really football was no longer even near the top of his priority list, which is why in training camp, the first few weeks here, he still didn't have a team.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because he is still a dynamic athlete and one who is a legitimate 4-3 guy. And those guys are of course, so valued in today's NFL. And of course, the Seahawks drafted, they know Paul Richardson well after drafting him out of Colorado way back in 2014. And of course, he had those four seasons in Seattle where he was a very productive football player before he went on to Washington for two seasons coming back to Seattle. So you're still talking about a young player going to be turning 28. A young player, a speedy player, a guy that gives you a lot of a flexibility behind Philip Dorsett, who is a similarly built player who gives you something in the passing game as far as being that vertical receiver. Richardson can do that as well as be a guy who high points passes pretty well for a relatively slim frame. So all of the physical things about him make a lot of sense in Seattle's offense. And then you just spoke about the perspective and the resiliency that he has shown as well. Those are also obviously things that the Seahawks have prioritized. We talked about it before with the way that Bruce Irvin has kind of grown up since he left Seattle and why he was such a valued player for them in his return. I think the same thing here with Paul Richardson.
Now, there's no guarantee that Paul Richardson's on the roster in week one. I would be surprised if he isn't with them bringing him in this late in the game, especially with the injuries that they've got at the position. It does sound like Philip Dorsett, Cody Thompson, and John Ursua, at least two of those three, have a good chance of returning to practice tomorrow. They've missed significant time, all three of them, with different various injuries. So that's one of the reasons Paul Richardson is being brought back to begin with, is they've had issues there. As Pete Carroll mentioned yesterday, they've just had issues with having enough receivers to conduct the practices the way they want to. But certainly Paul Richardson is going to bring that speed element to the table. And it's crazy. You mentioned the 4.33 speed that he exhibited at the combine in 2014. On most teams, that is going to make you the fastest receiver on the roster, if not the fastest player on the roster. On this particular Seahawks squad, though, he's probably not even the first or second fastest player in their receiving group, because you've got Philip Dorsett, who has ran in the 4.2s before. We know what DK Metcalf can do. He ran a 4.33. It's crazy. All three of these guys at their combine ran the same exact 40-yard dash time. So tons of speed there, and that's discounting Tyler Lockett, who, as we've said time and time again, maybe isn't quite the burner as far as straight-line speed that he was when he first entered the league, but he's still a very electric receiver. So if you have all four of those guys and they can stay healthy, that's especially big with Richardson. When you look at what happened the last 2 years in Washington, he only played 15 games. He had a season he missed 15 games for the Seahawks in 2015. So he has had a lot of trouble throughout his career staying healthy. The 1 year that he did play 16 games, though, was his best season for the Seahawks in 2017 with over 700 receiving yards, 6 receiving touchdowns. The Seahawks are not going to be asking him to produce those kind of numbers, probably being their number 4 guy in that receiving group. But it's another player with the ability to take the top off of a defense as a vertical threat. That's a solid route runner that brings some toughness to the table. If you're a defensive coordinator, can you imagine going against a four wide that's Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, Philip Dorsett, and Paul Richardson? I mean, I don't know how you're supposed to defend that. You're definitely not going to be able to double up on anybody because then somebody's going to break free wide open downfield. That would be a nightmare scenario if all those guys are healthy and they're playing at their top level.
No, you're absolutely right, Corbin. It is a nightmare scenario. That's exactly why the Seahawks, you know, wanted to do this, is to be able to provide Russell Wilson, the best deep ball thrower in the NFL, at least in my opinion, with those types of weapons that can stretch the field. And I think they're especially effective when you have the running game and the seam threats and the tight ends that this team has. So I think that this has a chance to be a really dynamic offense. I would be surprised to see Dorsett and Richardson on the field at the same time a lot, but at the same time I think that because their skill set is so similar that if a Dorsett or a Richardson struggle with injuries, then you'd be able to throw somebody else into the mix that has a very similar skill set. If one of those players does not make your roster, then perhaps the other one is sitting out there in free agency and the team already has a kind of a plan in place of what they might need to do at that spot, because as you mentioned earlier with just a wide receiver position in general, the Seahawks have had some training camp kind of bumps and bruises. Just the fact that it is the wide receiver position, it along with cornerbacks generally are the two positions that you have to have the most bodies on just to field an NFL roster. So kudos to the Seahawks for bringing back a player that they know already well, you know, is physically talented, mentally tough, and then also somebody that you have that fits in with what they're trying to do on offense. This isn't a case of just draft or just sign a guy because he runs fast. He actually fits into your scheme nicely as well.
It was nice to see Richardson back on the practice field. He was sporting number 8. He wore number 10 in his first time with the Seahawks, but he was back out there. Didn't do much yesterday, obviously. He's got to get the new playbook down, as he mentioned. There's some carryover from when he played for Daryl Bevel, but there's some new terminology. It's going to take a little bit of time for him to get adjusted, and they got to work him back completely into football shape. Again, he had other things on his plate this offseason than trying to fully prepare for his 7th NFL season. The other major news for the Seahawks, it's pretty positive to have Paul Richardson back. This news was on the opposite end of the spectrum. Pete Carroll yesterday, Brandon Jackson was placed in injured reserve, and speaking with reporters, indicated that the veteran defensive end is done for the entire 2020 season, and he compared his spinal condition that resulted from the injury he had 2 weeks ago. He compared that being similar to the injury that Cam Chancellor and Cliff Averill had. He said it was not the exact same thing, but you could read between the tea leaves. That is not a good situation when you're looking at the possibility of him playing again. Carroll was not going to rule that out yesterday, but he did say, Averill and Chancellor, you know what happened at the end there. So this is an unfortunate situation for a player that has earned so much respect in that locker room, being a former undrafted free agent and now being in his 5th NFL season. And he's a versatile guy that they're certainly going to miss, not just in the locker room, but on the field this year.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point, Corbin, because they are going to miss him in the locker room and they are going to miss him on the field. I mean, for all the reasons that you just mentioned, as an undrafted free agent, the grit, the passion. He was viewed by I know the players, I know the coaches and some scouts as being really one of the glue guys on this team. And, in terms of the locker room, in terms of just how much he was respected, and then on the football field, we talked about when we were doing our roster prognostication last week. I mean, he made our 53-man rosters in large part just because of the positional versatility. And 6'4", 295 pounds, he could play that five technique defensive end role. He could slot inside defensive tackle. The Seahawks don't have a lot of guys who can do that. There's a lot of hopes that maybe LJ Collier, Rasheem Green can do that, but they're quicker guys, or at least Green is, and Collier has that type of physicality, but he's more in that 6'2", 290, kind of a shorter, squattier build. So it is a loss to the Seahawks on the football field. I think it's an even bigger loss in terms of that locker room. I think it's one of the reasons why the Seattle has already shown some interest in signing some other guys along the defensive line. But, you know, I think they're going to have to very much be keeping an eye on what talent might be available, not only of the players that are currently on the market, but, of course, when we get to cut down, there's going to be a lot of players out there suddenly available. I'd be surprised if the Seahawks don't address their defensive line, given this really sad news for Brandon Jackson.
It's unfortunate. He's one of my favorite players, one of my favorite men on this football team. I've had the chance to interview him a couple times. Nothing but class. And just the fact that he's like, look, being cut in the NFL is not a death sentence. And he is proof of that. He's been cut multiple times by multiple teams, and yet he continues to end up back with the Seahawks and fight his way back onto the roster. And so, like you said, the grit, the resiliency, this is a guy that you can never count out. So you got to hope that this is a spinal issue that's not something that's going to be long-term. Maybe they'll reevaluate him after the season, and the doctors will say, we think that you're good to go now. We don't know how this is going to play out, but certainly it is possible that we have seen Brandon Jackson play his last game. Hopefully that's not the case, but that's the reality. This sport, you're going to have injuries like this sometimes, and it's unfortunate that they have to happen, but hopefully we're hoping for the best for Brandon. Hopefully he gets an opportunity to play again. When we come back for the second quarter, it's time for our Monday Locked On Seahawks mailbag. Tons of questions from you, the listeners. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate, and all the parts are available for your vehicle. Choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith, along with my good friend, Rob Rang. It's time for our Monday mailbag segment. We got tons of questions from you, the listeners. First question here coming from Seahawk Tweets. Why did you fire Rob Rang? Well, clearly I did not, because if I did, I don't think he would be on the other side here on the airwaves. But it's funny because, Rob, obviously you were let go by Sports Illustrated for the NFL Draft website. And so when you made that known yesterday, I had a flood of messages coming into my Twitter account from people that were screaming at me and stuff, asking me why I did that. And I guess this is just what I'll leave. Look, this was not, you know, I'm not even going to talk about the decision, but like, I had nothing to do with it. Rob is still working for the Seahawk Maven and contributing to our website, so that's where I'm going to leave it. I certainly have not fired Rob. Rob is here on the show, so I just want to throw that out there because I was just getting bombarded yesterday, and it's like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I'm just so flattered that so many people kind of, you know, rose up in my defense, so to speak, and all the kind words that I've received, you know, publicly and privately, a lot of text messages, a lot of direct messages on Twitter and, you know, phone call, all those different things from just so many people. So thank you. You know, when I signed up with Maven and Sports Illustrated, you know, during a pandemic, I knew that there was a risk there. I am proud of the work that I did with them. I certainly understand, you know, given these times and the lack of advertising and budget and all of those things that why I and others are vulnerable during this time. And as we've talked about in the past, Corbin, of course, I remain a full-time teacher. I mean, I'm one of the few who is fortunate to be in a position where I can you can handle a demotion like this and look for other opportunities. And so my heart is out there for all those who are in worse shape. But again, I'm proud to be working with you. I'm proud to still be a contributor to the Seahawks channel on Sports Illustrated and Maven. I have nothing but fond memories and looking forward to that next chapter in life. But thank you, Corbin, for not firing me. And I look forward to working as long as possible with you in the future.
Well, you know, it could happen again later. So I'm not going to say, no, just kidding. Mike Sent tweets, do you see the Hawks playing more dime this year with Marquise Blair and Trey Flowers on the field at the same time?
You know, I think that's a possibility. I just think that the talent level that the Seahawks have in the defensive backfield allows them a little bit more positional flexibility. I think that the way that you can expect that the Arizona Cardinals and Rams to continue to build up their offenses, I think indicate that you are going to see more spread option more spread looks, and the Seahawks are now going to have more options to be able to defend that rather than just going with the base linebacker system that did work pretty well last year, but obviously left the Seahawks vulnerable at times as well.
This was something that I argued for last season during the year. I thought that Seattle got away from some things that worked well for them during the 2018 season when they were running 6, even 7 defensive back packages out there, their bandit set. And Akeem King got some work. Lano Hill got some work that way. And I thought that they did a good job with that. Last year, it just seemed like it was a very vanilla defense. We know how much defense they play, or how much base they played last year. I think when you look at the upgrades that they've made in the secondary, the depth they have there, yeah, they absolutely are going to be doing some dime sets. I don't know if that means Trey Flowers is on the field or not. We'll have to see what they figure out to do there. I do think Flowers is going to get some snaps, but this is just going to be something that's still a kind of a fluid situation because we don't know who's starting at that right cornerback spot just yet. And that's still up for grabs. And they're trying to figure out, you know, is Blair going to be our guy exclusively in the slot, or is Ugo Amadi going to get some work there as well? So there's a lot of different things, a lot of variables they're still dealing with, but I absolutely expect that we're going to see more dime packages this year than what we did last year. Definitely going to see more nickel with 5 defensive backs on the field. Brady Hill tweets, besides Justin Britt, do you think Seattle will sign a starter before the season starts, or will the additions from here on be depth pieces?
Well, for me, I just, you know, the season starts in what, a couple of weeks. I just think it's very unlikely you're going to be able to pull off any type of move of that magnitude, and a player is going to be able to come in and be that familiar with the playbook to be able to start. So, just from a logistical standpoint, I do not believe that they're going to be able to sign any other starter at that point. Even if they sign Justin Britt, I think that Ethan Posick has, established himself as being their starter. Or at least their anticipated starter moving forward. But at the same time, we all know how John Schneider and Pete Carroll are. I mean, they are going to exhaust every opportunity to improve a talent in their roster. I just think that they have a damn talented roster as it is right now. And why run the risk of shaking that up for a player unless they feel that he is a difference maker?
The only way that this question for me is going to be anything aside from depth pieces is if somehow a miracle happens and Jadeveon Clowney is back in a Seahawks uniform, because you could realistically get him back and get him ready to go a week before the season. We saw him do it last year, and he already knows the scheme. So that would be the one exception. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but as long as he remains unsigned, I guess there's an outside chance that he could return to the Seahawks for the 2020 season. But as you said, we're now getting to the nitty-gritty. They're going to be playing in Atlanta here in 14 days. So I think that the chance of them adding another starter to the mix, they're probably past that point here. Justin Britt maybe could start down the road if they re-signed him. But as of right now, he's still free agent. Unlike Paul Richardson, they have not brought him back into the fold. So we don't know where he's at medically either. There are plenty of question marks there. Serge tweets, do you think Seattle even considers signing Leonard Fournette?
Well, I think they'll consider it. I mean, this is still a very, very talented player. Now, he's, you can say what you want about, his lack of on-field production, however you want to say it, that the struggles with durability and all these different things. But at the same time, I also know this is a back that is 6 foot, 230 pounds, running in the high 4.4s, low 4.5s, just the type of power. I mean, he is perfect for what Pete Carroll and Brian Schottenheimer have loved to build their offense around. But again, as we talked about before, I think this is a really talented roster, and I think that the running back position in particular is really talented. I was not there to see that third preseason game, but every indication I've had and what my own eyes saw when I was up on that berm and saw Chris Carson's first practice, I believe, with the Seahawks, is that he looks like he's raring to go. So I think that the Seattle will certainly show some interest in Fournette if he were to clear waivers or whatever. I just think that that's not something that they have to do.
I don't think they're going to be seriously looking at him at this point. And I know earlier in the offseason we were talking about potentially Seattle trading for him. We even had a trade where they got him and Ngakoue before the draft. But that was before they signed Carlos Hyde in May. And that was before DJ Dallas came in as a rookie and has been really impressive in training camp. I don't see any reason to add Leonard Fournette to the mix. Now, I know Seattle, they never leave a stone unturned. And certainly this guy fits the profile of what Pete Carroll likes to have in the backfield, being a physical downhill between the tackles runner. But you've got Chris Carson, you've got Carlos Hyde, you have DJ Dallas, Rashad Penny's going to be back at some point. I don't see any reason that Seattle would be a front runner for his services. That being said, as you've mentioned, John Schneider has a tendency occasionally to surprise people, so maybe Leonard Fournette is going to be viewed as an upgrade over some of the guys they've got, and they'll make a move. I just don't see it happening, though. I don't think they're even going to seriously consider with the depth they have. Again, before Carlos Hyde, I think it would have been a different situation. But now that he's in the fold, he's looked good in training camp. Dallas has looked good. I don't see any way that they're in the mix for Fournette's services. Robin Solari tweets, based on what you've seen and heard, do you think Quentin Dunbar will start against Atlanta?
No, I think the Trey Flowers and Shaquille Griffin are going to wind up being your starting cornerbacks. It's not that I don't think that Quentin Dunbar can be a starter and potentially is an upgrade. His track record in Washington speaks for itself. I just think that the Trey Flowers has the built-in advantage of knowing the system. I think he's pissed. I think that he didn't have quite the season a year ago, maybe at times, that he could have, and he's been raked over the coals a little bit in the offseason. So I think that he is as motivated from what I've seen. Go back to the question. I thought the Trey Flowers looked great. I thought Dunbar looked good too, but Flowers, I thought, looked great out there. And so I'm really intrigued to see who winds up starting for the Seahawks. And either way, I think that it's key for the Seahawks to have both of those players as well as Griffin, because I think that those three players are really good starting caliber corners in lots of different systems. And not only the safety, we talk so much about Adams and Diggs, but I really think that those corners are key for the Seahawks this year as well. So I'm not comfortable enough to say that I think that Dunbar is going to wind up being a starter. I just think that those three corners give Seattle an awful lot of flexibility moving forward.
I think Quentin Dunbar is in the secondary starting at right corner in week one. I guess here's my rationale behind it. If he had come into this system and had no experience with a kick step technique and some of the other stuff that Seattle incorporates when they're instructing their cornerbacks, then I think if he was starting from scratch, given the circumstances he reported late, and we all know the legal issues he was dealing with, normally in those circumstances, I would not be starting a guy like that in week one, especially because they've been kind of slow playing him at practice. But the fact that he has that past experience working with Marquand Manuel, who played for the Seahawks, he was a coach for the Seahawks, he knows that kick step technique really well. And Pete Carroll was talking to reporters yesterday. He's been really impressed by that, and it's helped speed up his learning curve. And Trey Flowers missed yesterday's scrimmage, and it's a minor sprained ankle, so nothing severe. But I think he was in a situation where any missed time that he has in the field that Quentin Dunbar can take advantage and get out there on the field. I can't talk about specifics from yesterday's scrimmage, but I just have a feeling that here in the next 2 weeks, Quentin Dunbar is going to overtake him. I don't know. I don't really have concrete evidence as to why, but I just have a feeling based on what Pete Carroll said and some things that I've seen in the field that's where we're going to be at in week one. Tony Montana tweets, at this point in time, where is Seattle with LJ Collier? I really haven't heard anything much about him. And when Pete speaks, it's about Irvin and Maiola.
Yeah, I think it's a great question because I think you're not likely to hear a lot about LJ Collier, just given what reporters can say and report and the vantage that we've had. If you're up on that berm or even if you're on the sideline, it's really hard to see the intricacies of line play. And if you're one of those edge rushers, a Mayo or a Irvin or a Alton Robinson, for example, if they get by one guy, and they force the quarterback to step up a little bit, it's fairly obvious for anybody to see, but it's much tougher inside. I think that is one of the reasons why you're not going to get a lot of buzz about Collier, but he looks like he's in much better shape. I was impressed by his quickness. I've always been impressed by his toughness and his grit and his instincts and all that kind of stuff. Those are some of the things that stood out about him before. So I've never thought that he was going to wind up being a really splashy player for the Seahawks. I think he's going going to be a real strong contributor for them. And once you actually get the games on where we can see what's going on and the battles when they're in pads and all that, that's where you're going to see Collier start to separate himself as the second-year NFL player than the almost deer-in-the-headlights kind of rookie he was a year ago.
I can't break down the snap differential, whether he's been playing first or second team or any of that kind of stuff. And really, the way the Seahawks handle practice, it can be difficult at times to make those assessments anyway. But I'm going to wholeheartedly agree with you, though. LJ Collier looks leaner. He looks like he's in better shape. He looks more explosive. He's not going to be a guy that's going to pin his ears back. That's never going to be his game. But he certainly looks quicker and faster on the field to me. And I've been encouraged by what I've been able to see from him when they've done one-on-one drills. You can see the hand technique, which was something that I thought was a strength for him coming out of TCU, is he could offset the fact that he didn't have the most overwhelmingly great athleticism by the fact that he had a pretty sound toolbox of pass rushing counters for a player of his size, and he could use those both inside and out. And so I don't think that he's had a bad training camp. He's not necessarily that flashy guy that's going to draw a ton of attention all the time, but he's definitely made strides, and I think he's going to have a key role along that defensive line, playing multiple spots, playing five tech, and also reducing inside. I anticipate you're going to see quite a bit of him on Sundays this year, which is good news for the former first-round pick. When we come back for the third quarter, we're going to take a close look at what happened yesterday, as close as we really can, to the mock scrimmage, break down some of Pete Carroll's comments from after the game as well. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for our Monday episode, Rob Rang. Yesterday, the Seahawks held their final dress rehearsal, no preseason games, but their third mock scrimmage of the month of August. The first two happened at CenturyLink Field. You had a lot less perks in this particular one. They were playing at the VMAC, their normal practice facility, so you didn't have a national anthem. You didn't have them wearing their actual game uniforms like they did the last mock scrimmage, but they were able to get a lot done on the field. Unfortunately, no box score provided, no stats, very limited in what we are allowed to talk about, aside from some of Pete Carroll's comments after the game. So he opened the door to some stuff that we can dive into. I can't break into the specifics, but first and foremost, from yesterday, Tyler Lockett had himself a day. He and Russell Wilson look to be in midseason form, really in sync. And we got a couple questions for our mailbag segment. We decided to save it for here because it was kind of a good segue off of what happened in the scrimmage. But, Rob, there's been so much talk about DK Metcalf, and understandably so. He's made strides this training camp. He looks like he is primed for a superstar caliber season with his ability to high point the football, burn people downfield. He's running routes from the slot now. But it does seem like people have kind of forgotten that Tyler Lockett was the leading receiver for this team, not DK Metcalf. He's only 28 years old. He's still an ascending player. And just seeing his savviness as a route runner yesterday, that's about what I'm limited to say right now. But he had a really fine day and kind of put people on notice a little bit that, hey, I'm still here.
Oh, exactly. I mean, Tyler Lockett and Russell Wilson, the rapport they have, I mean, it's just like poetry in motion. It's really beautiful to watch. I mean, for somebody who watches as much football as you do, and certainly as I have over my life in football, when you see a quarterback and a receiver who don't even have to communicate, they know based on what they're seeing with the defense, Tyler Lockett knows when to stop against zone coverage. He knows where the pressure's coming. He knows where the sideline is. He knows how to set up cornerbacks, so beautifully. And Russell Wilson's accuracy, his willingness to take those types of shots is just unbelievable. And so I think that when you look at a guy who is built and like DK Metcalf, and you just think, my goodness, look at this guy. I mean, he was just literally born with his DNA. He is born to play football. And I mean, he's just, looks exactly the way that you want. He is that flashy athlete. And then you look at Tyler Lockett, who is as short, who also has terrific NFL DNA, but at the same time has a much smaller build, then it's easy to see why people get so excited about DK Metcalf and why people kind of sleep on Tyler Lockett. And yet the Pro Bowler that he is, the reigning leading receiver as he is, as you mentioned, I think that if you had to put money on it, I would continue to put my money on Tyler Lockett being Seattle's most successful receiver moving forward, even though DK Metcalf's upside is absolutely through the roof. There's a reason why I've made that comparison in the past to Julio Jones. You've talked about Terrell Owens. I mean, my goodness, we're talking about two of the most physically dominant receivers the NFL has ever seen, and this guy is just going into his second season. You know, again, we talked about before, Russell Wilson has probably the best weapons on this team he's ever had, and I think a lot of people are sleeping on that dynamic, and one of the reasons why I'm very excited to see what the Seahawks are going to be able to do, especially on the offensive side of the ball this year.
I think that DK Metcalf is eventually going to be that number one receiver, but I just don't know that it's going to be this year, because Tyler Lockett, as you mentioned, is still just a phenomenal talent on the outside. He doesn't have the physical tools that DK Metcalf does, but he's just such a great route runner, plays the game with such savvy, and he's got underrated speed still. The quickness that he brings to the table, especially working out of the slot, a guy that could move all over the formation, you can run sweeps with him. He is still an extremely valuable player, and he's proven himself to be a more than capable number one receiver. So Seattle's really got a great situation here. You could have two number one receiver caliber players on the outside at Russell Wilson's disposal with the other weapons that they have put around them. And so yesterday was the best that he has looked all training camp, but that's good news with the regular season drawing closer here, only 2 weeks away. In the backfield, Chris Carson. It's been a really rocky month of August for Chris Carson. He's back healthy from the hip injury that ended his season in December last year, but he's had to deal with some major issues in his family. There was, I believe he actually had multiple deaths in the family, and that was why he took two leaves of absence from Seahawks camp. He came back a few days ago. Yesterday was the most that I've seen him get work in on the practice field. Again, I can't break down individual runs and stuff that he did, but you could see that he's fully healthy. He was running well, great burst with the football. You could see the ball carrier vision on display as well. And as Pete Carroll mentioned after the game, you could definitely tell he's got fresh legs, and they're just trying to gradually work him back into being ready for week one, but he's ready to go. I could tell this yesterday, and Pete Carroll mentioned that we, you know, if we had a game, he could be ready to go. I think that your bell cow is going to be ready for 20 carries against the Atlanta Falcons in that season opener. No reservations about it. He's fully healthy. He's running like we're used to seeing Chris Carson run, and that is really good news for the Seahawks offense, because they're going to need to be able to control the ground game a little bit when you're playing Matt Ryan and that Falcons offense that I expect is going to be able to put plenty of points on the board.
Yeah, exactly. And you know the Seahawks are going to want to run the football to keep Matt Ryan off the field as much as possible. And Chris Carson, of course, is just such an important part to that. I do feel confident that the Seahawks have the backup in place right now in the veteran Carlos Hyde, who would be able to play that role if necessary. I am excited about the upside that DJ Dallas as well as Travis Homer have shown throughout this training camp. At the same time, Chris Carson, in my opinion, is absolutely a Pro Bowl caliber back who I think is on the precipice of a 12 to 13 to 1400 yard season. I mean, truly having a phenomenal season for the Seahawks. But if you don't have the physicality with which he is, of course, so well known, then that's the concern. As I mentioned before, and in what I had seen with Chris Carson, I did see those fresh legs, as Pete Carroll called it. I did see that burst, but he runs so physically that's my biggest concern, is that is he in true football shape? He's in weight room shape. There's no question about that. Chris Carson is just as physically gifted as it gets that way. But I do have some reservations about whether or not he's going to be able to hit the ground running with those 20 carries, in week one, because you want him to be just as effective when you're playing, hopefully, in week 17 and 18.
Well, the one good thing, they do have Carlos Hyde now, and he's looked really good in training camp as well. So maybe they won't have to force the issue in week one either. They can work him, ease him back into being that bell cow back, and they've got another guy that's more than capable of doing that in Carlos Hyde. And maybe even Nick Belor. He got some carries in the game yesterday. I don't know that I'd ever seen Nick Belor run the football, but anyway, Pete Carroll mentioned it after the game was over with, and just mentioning the lack of depth that they've had there the last couple of days because a few guys are a little bit banged up, but certainly getting Carson back is only going to help with that situation. Now, on the defensive side of the football, we talked a little bit about this in the second quarter with one of our listener questions. Quentin Dunbar getting an opportunity to play with the first team defense, if you want to call them that. They were rotating guys, but he was getting a lot of the snaps that were going to Trey Flowers because Flowers was out with a sprained ankle yesterday. Who knows how long he's going to be out? If he's sidelined more than a couple practices, that could be a problem because this is a true competition for that right cornerback position. And just being able to get Dunbar out there for more snaps, even without, you know, breaking down how he performed, how he played on the field, as I mentioned, this is extremely important for him just simply because he just needs reps. He needs opportunities with a new defense that he's trying to learn, a new scheme, and competition this close, it's certainly, to me, a big deal. If he has to miss more than one practice, then that's not going to bode well for Flowers.
Oh, no question about it. As familiar as Trey Flowers is with Seattle's scheme, as we talked about in that second quarter, at the same time, if you're not able to play, well, then certainly it's going to give Dunbar all the opportunity that he needs to really seize that job and never let it go, because he is physically gifted. He is, well-suited to this scheme and already experienced enough in it, as you mentioned before, with his familiarity with Mark Emanuel and how Seattle likes to use their the kick slide and all of that. To me, one of the things that is, again, so concerning about it from a Seahawks perspective is that you are going to be going on the road to a team with, like, Atlanta, for example, in week one, that has a star quarterback with receivers that he is very, very familiar with, and Julio Jones and another fellow first-round pick in Calvin Ridley. And so I think that the Seahawks would rather have a player like a Trey Flowers starting at this point, just because you'd like to think that he is going to have already established a little bit more rapport with Quandre Diggs and with Jamal Adams. And that may not be the case, because if Flowers is not on the field, then that's going to give Dunbar that opportunity. But either way, I really think, again, that it is critical that the Seattle has the depth that they have at the cornerback position, as I mentioned with Matt Ryan and that offense in week one. But also think of the quarterbacks, think of the receivers in the NFC West. You have the same three quarterbacks, you have the same offensive coordinators, and the only difference really at the receiver position was actually an upgrade for the Cardinals and getting, DeAndre Hopkins, obviously a significant addition for them. So again, I think that at least early on in the year that Seattle is most likely to go with the players who have that built-in experience in their current scheme. But there is no denying Dunbar's talent and the fact that he has made some splashy plays here in training camp to kind of give Seattle that reason to believe that he could be that day one starter if necessary.
Real quick, I want to talk about the crazy finish to this mock scrimmage, because unfortunately I can't really share any details from what happened up to this point. I can't break down individual routes, players that made catches, a lot of the standouts, but Pete Carroll talked about this after the game yesterday, and it was really fun to watch this unfold in the field. They were getting a lot of really good situational football in yesterday, which obviously is crucial when you're trying to prepare for the real deal when you have regular season games starting on September 13th. But they were inside 2 minutes. I believe they had a minute 40 on the clock, according to Carroll, and the offense had a couple timeouts. And Russell Wilson's given the football. This is the situation that the Seahawks hope to be in at the end of games, that Russell Wilson has the ball in his hand with a chance to win the football game. And he led his team right down the field, but they had a couple fourth down conversions they had to make. The defense was not just letting them push their way down the field at will. It was a really good back and forth battle there. And inside 15 seconds to play in the mock scrimmage, Russell Wilson drops back to throw, and suddenly he's got three or four pass rushers in his face. And normally in that situation, the whistle's getting blown, and the play is dead because you don't want your quarterback getting hit in practice. Well, Pete Carroll, as he said, I'm the commissioner in this particular play. Pete Carroll decided that I've seen Russell Wilson get out of situations like this scrambling enough in previous years. You know what? Let's just say this play continues. And so Russell Wilson steps up and then he finds DK Metcalf. Metcalf came back towards him, makes the throw, completes it, and gets the touchdown. And then you could suddenly hear the defensive players. They are just irate. Like, we had the sack. Are you kidding me? And it was just, it was really funny, you know, to have this controversy on the field. And the defense is livid. We won the game. And the offense is celebrating. And Carroll, of course, at the end said, you know, sometimes that just happens. Had a nice smile on his face. But it was a really fun way to end the scrimmage. And I'm just happy that I could talk about it because it was really cool to see this unfold. And all of us on the berm were trying to guess what player are they going to run, which player is going to get the football in his hands. And so it was a lot of fun. And just seeing both sides there, it was really good for both the offense and the defense. The defense might say it wasn't as good for us because we got ripped off. But it was still really fun to see.
You know, exactly, and that's the thing. It's amazing how many practices that Pete Carroll's, you know, the players on both sides of the team are having fun and are competitive, and you know, it's that they create these competitive moments, and I think that's good for the team. It's good for the defense to build, to gel together. Obviously, it's great to hear Russell Wilson being able to evade that rush, be able to find DK Metcalf, as you mentioned, DK Metcalf running back to Russell Wilson. That's the type of rapport that Wilson has already established with Tyler Lockett. That so it's encouraging to hear DK Metcalf being able to make those types of strides. The competitiveness, the anger, the spirit from the defenders who feel like they got, you know, kind of robbed of their victory. You know, I mean, all of those things are all, have to be music to the ears of Seahawks fans out there who are just eager to see the football really start for real here in just a couple of weeks.
Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on tomorrow's show, it's Throwback Tuesday. We're going to revisit an epic performance from a Seahawks legend back in 2002. Plus, we're going to talk bubble players with the most on the line with 1 week of Seahawks training camp remaining. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Go Hawks.